I'd like to introduce our friend Gracia Lopez from Seville. Thank you very much for joining us, Gracia. And just to say a little bit for those of you, some of you have met Gracia in person in Spain, some have not. So for those of you who don't know her, she's an assistant professor at the University of Seville in the Department of Arab and Islamic Studies. And she's done basically almost all her research on Ibn Arabi. Her PhD was on one of his shorter treatises, Uqlat al-Mustawfiz, a cosmological treatise. And she's currently involved in a research project linked with the University of Salamanca in Spain on feminine sainthood in North Africa. But her title today is very appropriate for this kind of meeting online, The Structure of the Universe as a Network. So, Gracia, without more ado, over to you and thank you.
Thank you, Stephen, and thanks everybody who is attending here today. Thanks also to the team of Ibn Arabi Society in Oxford for being always so generous and so kind with me and inviting me in this occasion to join this extraordinary series of conferences about geometry of reality in honor and in memory of Michel Chodkiewicz and Keith Critchlow. The starting point of this talk is a set of texts, of Ibn Arabi's texts, especially from Uqlat al-Mustawfiz, this treatise that has mentioned Stephen, and which is a short cosmological treatise. And all of these texts are related to the idea of knot or node and bones or threads. It is not a presentation of perfectly close and comprehensive theory, but rather a suggestion of ideas that could be connected. Because it is always difficult when it comes to work with the text of Ibn Arabi to make a definite conclusion or a definite scheme of his ideas. The first concept we will deal on in this talk is that of the raqiqa, or a plural raqa'iq, which can be translated as such relations or connections, tenuities, it is this like Chittick translates it, and he defines them as subtle lines of influence, ray also, or thread. On the basis of Ibn Arabi's texts, Suad Hakim defines it as the links, sila, that are extended between the realities or essences, and they are similar to the rays of the sun, Asha, in its fineness when they reach the sight, the human sight. Each reality, according to Ibn Arabi, each haqiqa, irradiates rays. Sometimes Ibn Arabi himself uses this metaphor or image of the sun and the rays that links the upper realities with the lower ones. And through them, knowledge and existence is supplied. It can be related also to the attributes or gender of created things. So we have, for example, in his work, Isharat al-Quran, that he says the masculine and feminine, which are united in the haqiqah, but ordered in the circle of creation, have differentiated their ranks before of a difference of raqiqah. So the raqa'iq have a lot to do with the pass from the unity to the differentiation or the multiplicity. Another image used by Ibn Arabi to explain how these raqa'iq work is, apart from the sun and its rays, the fire and the smoke. He uses this metaphor in Tarjuman al-Ashwaq, his Diwan of poetry, and he says that the raqa'iq link the realities to make them become united as much as the smoke is united or connected to the flame, to the fire. So everything, he says, everything is or becomes mutasil, connected, and not muqati'a. No, so it's very important in related to this idea of the raqiqa and raqaiq, very important the notion of absence of void or absence of any blank space between things. Everything becomes mutasila, no? Connected. What do they connect? We have some different names for the things, the elements they connect. For example, a quotation from Futuhat says, between these forms, suwar, of the high spheres, uluwiyat, and the forms of the low elements, sufliyat, threads are extended to the most beautiful names and the realities of lordliness. There are the specific faces or facets of every possible being originated from the being originated from the imperative be through an orientation of God's will. So we have the upper and lower spheres connected with the divine names, not in an arbitrary way, but always following the will of God. Of course, we have also another idea very important related to raqa'iq, which is that of projection and reception. And in chapter 2 from Futuhat, a chapter entirely devoted to the letters, the science of letters, Ibn Arabi explains that God has three letters. There are three letters that correspond to God, which are Alif, Zain, Lam, and three letters which belong, let's so to speak, to man, which are Nun, Sad, and Dad. Both of them, if we multiply them by the three worlds, Mulk, Malakut, and Jabarut, would give us a result, nine spheres. Nine and nine. And Ibn Arabi calls the nine God spheres as spheres of projection, and the nine human spheres, the spheres of reception. And he says, from each of the essential realities of the nine spheres, subtle bones extend out toward the nine human spheres, and from these reciprocally go back to the divine spheres. I have remarked this word because I think it's interesting to have in mind that the relation, the raqa'iq, don't come on in one direction only, from God to man or from high sphere to lower sphere, but also they follow the contrary path toward their origin. So there is a reciprocity, a dialogue, even as we shall see. Another interesting passage, I think, is this from Futuhat, also, which says, God created rank, makana, before he created place, makan. Then he stretched tenuities, these tenuities are the raqa'iq, from rank to specific places. Then he brought into existence the things in their spaces. I think it's interesting, this idea of creating the rank or the place that corresponds, not the place, but the degree, the grade that correspond to a creature before creating the creature itself and the place it will be. And there is another idea connected with this one that says, also in Futuhat, that the raqiqa is created before the haqiqa. Because taking into account that, as we have seen, the raqiqa supplies with existence something, gives knowledge and existence to the things of the world, it is logical to think that you have to create before the thing itself, before it comes to existence, you have to create the raqiqa that will give him or her or it existence. So it may seem a paradox, but it has a logic, taking into account that the raqiqa supplies with existence. The khalq and the haq, the haqiqa and the khaliqa, both of them are connected by means of raqa'iq. Divine names are also connected among them and also with created things in a sort of dialogue. I have displayed here this diagram designed by Fenton and Gloton on the basis of the text of Kitab Shadawa'ir. Ibn Arabi doesn't, he usually draws schemes and diagrams, but in this case, this one has been designed by Paul Fenton and Maurice Gloton. And I what I wanted to show is only to have an image of how intricate this net of raqa'iq can be, and also show in one look this dialogue or cosmogonic drama among the divine names. I know the letters are tiny, but we have different degrees of divine names, and the lower glows of the diagram are the world of hell, the world of paradise, and in between the world as it is, le monde en temps qu'est-il. It is very interesting this kind of dialogue that occurs in Kitab Anqa Mughrib and also in Kitab Insha Ad-Dawair, when we see that God talks to his own essence and they both talk to the name Al-Qadir, to tell the name Murid, to put in order the whole cosmos. So the origin of creation, it is a sort of dialogue between God and his essence with the names, with the rest of name. Of course, every name has a different function in that drama of the cosmogony of the universe. The raqa'iq, all of these lines in the diagram are raqa'iq. Some of them, as you can see, are double, or in the text it says that some of them are gathered in groups of three raqa'iq, and some of them have a name, like a proper name. So if we see from the fourth level of divine names, we have the race of perfection, race of specification, race of command, race of benefit and damage, and finally the ray that divide the people of paradise and people of hell. And so they somehow are inspired or follow the names of God, which are the attributes of God, and each raqa'iq has also a function, a name. If you continue with asking ourselves, what do these raqa'iq link, we will find also this passage in Futuhat al-Makkiyah that says, God has made the human being as the sum of the subtle connection of the whole world. And from him to everything in the world, a subtle relation extended. No, is extended, sorry. Yes, mumtamad. The raqiqa between the servant and every part of the world could use, it says, exist according to an affinity or according to what is appropriated, yunasib, with the world and what has an affinity with him, with the human being, yunasib. So we have, I think, a very important aspect here, which is the likeness or the affinity between the things that are connected through these raqiqa. Another fundamental and basic idea that we find it in the whole doctrine of Ibn Arabi is that the human being is the locus of not only of the haqa'iq of the world, but also the raqa'iq, or those links become united or gathered in the human being, in the servant. We find the word munasaba, imdad, or imtadda, connected with the word raqiqa, no? This extension or supply, and munasaba, a correlation, affinity, has a lot to do with this raqa'iq. Also, a very important aspect is, again, the mutual influence between the two extremes or the two things connected by that raqiqa. Another passage here from Futuhat says, there is no form in the lower world without a likeness, mithl, in the higher world. The forms of the higher world preserve the forms of the lower world. Between the two worlds, there are tenuities which extend from each form to its likeness. They are ascending and descending ladders. Sometimes they are called affinities. So again, this idea of likeness or model, being similar to something or having a model in something, and again, the reciprocity. The raqa'iq have implications with the angelology doctrine of Ibn Arabi. We have some passages that connect very obviously these things, the angels and the raqa'iq. For example, there are subtle threads which extend from the universal soul to the throne. These are like ladders, ma'arij, for the angels, while the meanings that descend in these tenuities are like angels. So we have that these threads that make a net in the universe, they are used by angels to move up, upwards, downwards. We have also in our work that it is maybe a pseudo epigraph and not our authentic work by Ibn Arabi. Probably Stephen and Jane can know this better than me. The treatise Shaq al-Juyub or Shaq al-Jayb. It says, Jibril, Mikael, Israfil, and Azrael, and other chief angels, these luminous universal realities, are the subtle rays from the Muhammadan realities. So we have an identification between haqa'iq and raqa'iq with the angels. So these four great angels are at the same time haqa'iq, nuriya, luminous realities, raqa'iq, and also they are a manifestation of the Muhammadan reality, the haqiqa Muhammadiyya, used to exist. Well, we could be talking about the haqiqa Muhammadiyya for hours because it is also a complex concept with a lot of facets, but we can see that it's a reality that pre-exists creation. And we have another passage that says, wherever these bones meet, and the verb used here is ishtama, the angel itself is the meeting point, and it is there where the angel comes to existence, hadatha. This newly arrived fact is thus the angel itself. If it bows with its whole being toward one of the sets of nine spheres, this is the nine spheres we were talking a minute ago. The other side attracts it. It thus comes and goes from one another. Yataraddadu. Also from chapter 2. This is very interesting for different reasons. First of all, I like the idea of using the verb hadatha to mean that when two lines are crossed with each other, an angel takes place or happen there, because it's a very dynamic image of the universe. You know, the angels are not established in fixed places, but they are being created all the time. And the world of the human spheres and divine spheres kind of move back and forth, because this movement of that the angels themselves do. Ibn Arabic tells us about the movement of the human being, the genies, the jinn, and the angels, and he tells us that the angels are the only creatures able to move in every direction, more than the human, the three-dimensional directions that we are, in the world we live in, we humans live. So that is very interesting too. Where do these bones tie together? One of the places, so to speak, that these bones are tied together is the Unsur Adam, or greatest element or supreme element, which is exposed in the treatise Uqlat al-Mustawfis. It doesn't say a lot about this element, but compared with other books by Ibn Arabi, I think this one is the one in which we can find more information about this cryptic element. We have that God created in the veiled world of the unseen, al-ghayb al-mastur, a world impossible to unveil from the power of the creatures, which is the greatest element. This creation took place at once, without a concatenation of occasion nor causes, and there is no access to this element. This greatest or supreme element, it is identified sometimes with the mysterious principle of life, the central dot of the cosmos, the prime matter of the philosophers, the divine sustenance, and it is more seminal and more basic than the first intellect, and it's been created prior the first intellect. It is kept in the most hidden of the hidden, and it has a specific inclination toward the world of primary writing. The primary writing is, take into account that I have translated this from Arabic to Spanish and then into English, so I have chosen words in English or sentences that may be questionable. This primary writing is the alam at-tadwin wa at-tasdir, so the world of recording and writing. The world of recording and writing, it is thrown by the pen and the table, and also the ink and the inkwell in a lesser extent. This greatest element is the most perfect among the existent things, and if we were not to have a secrecy covenant which prevents us from exposing its transcendent reality, we would have exposed how everything other than God, that is Masiwala, the creation, is connected to this element. In that inclination, the first intellect was created. It is called first intellect, because it is the first of the world of the writing, or the worlds of the writing. So we have here that the first intellect or pen emerges from an inclination of this greatest element. From the first intellect, subtle relations, raka'iq, are extended to the soul, the prime matter, the body, the fixed stars, the center, and the elements. And through an ascending movement, they reach and engender beings, the human being, and the greatest element, where these subtle relations tie together. And he uses in aqada, to make a knot. That is the origin of 46,656,000 subtle relations. As Mohammed Yusuf Hajj has pointed out in his Ibn Arabi Time and Cosmology, this number is the cube of 360, which is the degrees of a sphere. A little further in Uqlat al-Mustawfis, it is explained that the pen has 360 tips, 360 faces, and 360 tongues. So these three things multiplied by three would give this number of subtle relations gathered in the supreme element. In relation to the sphere of the world, the greatest element would be the central dot, and the circumference would be the pen, while the tablet is what is between them both. And in the same way the dot comprehends the circumference in its essence, this element comprehends in its essence all of the facets of the pen, which constitute those subtle relations we talked about before. They are one in the element, and they multiply themselves in the intellect according to the diverse modes of reception of the element in the intellect. That's why the greatest element is stronger when recognizing the unity of its creator, because it is able to unite or gather all this multiplicity displayed in the universe through the manifestation of the pen on the table. This greatest element, which is very, very mysterious and cryptic, has been identified by Mohammed Yusuf Hajj in the mentioned book as the single monad, as the smallest and most simple base of creation. No, it's like the smallest and most basic model of the universe, and it has a special relation to water, this unsur Adam, because in a passage in Uqlat al-Mustawfis, and Ibn Arabi mentioned the greatest element, and he says that we would understand what the greatest element mean if we understood the Quranic ayah, "We made from water every living thing," in Quran 21:30. It has also a lot to do with the name, the divine name Al-Hayy, the living one, and also the name of names, this supreme name, Ism Adam, which is secret and comprehends the other names some in a way. The other place where these bones, these raqa'iq, tie together are, as we have seen, the perfect human being, the insan al-kamil. We have in Uqlat al-Mustawfa, God made him arise as a perfect copy of the universe, bringing together in himself from the forms of the contingent realities, as well as the names referred to the eternal. He made him, exalted be he, as an intelligible essence linking Rabbit to realities, the contingent and the eternal. He created him as an isthmus, barzakh, that brings together the two sides and the two subtle relations. We have here this raqiqatayn that are supposed to mean the raqiqa contingent and the raqiqa eternal, no? Those two aspects which are opposite and contradictory are linked in the human being. I want to, I don't usually make comparisons with between concepts, Ibn Arabi's concepts of the doctrines or concepts with those outside the Islamic tradition, because this it's a risk and it can be superficial if you don't know deeply the other elements of the comparison. But I think in this case, it is very interesting.